Journalism is in my blood, my 1960s Melbourne childhood inked with its atmosphere, its tools of the trade, its characters and intriguing ephemera. My father's cuttings and scrapbooks from his days as a reporter with United Press International. His old press passes and medallions, news photos of him interviewing sports stars. His Underwood typewriter with the yellowing keys that clacked and danced. The machine's hard, black, ill-fitting cover and the sheets of thin pink paper with their delightful chemical smell. Though he left United Press International and daily journalism in the early 1960s for a job in television, my father remained forever a freelance writer and a member of Melbourne journalism's gregarious tribe. When I was nine, I was finally allowed to try my hand at typing on Dad's Underwood. The quick brown fox jumps over the lazy dog. Now is the time for all good men to come to the aid of the party. Once I'd poked at the shift key and swapped the ink choice from black to red a few times too many, the ribbon would stuff up. It's not a toy, I'd be told, and the rickety thing, its metal letter sticks, like prehistoric insects' legs, would fly rebelliously out and then back into place as it was whisked away. Our lounge room walls were lined with books, classics, old and new. Shakespeare, Goethe, Tolstoy, Hemingway, Steinbeck and War. Books mostly by men, it has to be said, although Edna O'Brien's The Girl with the Green Eyes was an intriguing exception. As a kid, I scribbled all over them, thinking I too was engaging in the important practice of writing. Some of those old editions still bear my hasty pen marks and my first efforts to write my name inside them. News events like the Petrov Affair and the stories behind such stories filled our house. So too did the first-hand accounts, newsy in their own right, of my mother's family caught up in the 20th century's biggest story, World War II. My parents' crowd was one of journalists, television producers and script writers. In 1968, a television news producer family friend hosted the visit to Melbourne of an eyewitness to US Senator Robert Kennedy's assassination. His name was Ray. He'd been 3 feet away, and we took him to see the kangaroos at Healesville Sanctuary. This crystallised my tendency to see the world as one big news story. The news stories I most feared, but which fascinated me, involved kidnappers and children. As a child born in that decade, the 1966 disappearance of the Beaumont children loomed large in my fearscape. I worried that someone would cut open the fly wire of my sister's and my bedroom window and take us in the night. I once saw in the Melbourne Sun that a boy my age was murdered in Adelaide. A razor blade was used. Not long after, I found a razor blade in the dirt while playing at the Salvation Army home for children across the road from where we lived in Camberwell. I tried to break it up with my hand so it couldn't be used for a bad purpose. My fingers were covered in blood by the time I ran home. Just as I couldn't explain, my mother couldn't understand what drove me. In October 1972, two men kidnapped six students and their teacher from the Faraday Primary School in northwest Melbourne. This was my kind of story. My father and I laid out three newspapers on the kitchen table, The Sun, The Age, and The Australian. We talked headlines, layout, and background paragraphs. This story ended happily, the school teacher leading a brave escape and the children to safety. I knew then I wanted to be a journalist. I was 10 years old. My father dreaded the idea of me becoming one, or said he did. I'd heard him say women journalists grew bald. This didn't worry me. If balls were what the smart, gregarious women journalists who came to our house had, I bloody wanted them. Whenever we drove past the gunmetal, grey Herald and Weekly Times building at 44 Flinders Street, Melbourne, I imagined myself walking in there, story in hand. People advised me against journalism. Do law like your QC grandfather, some said. But journalism had grabbed me and wouldn't let me go. When my father died, family contacts in journalism vowed to help me into the newspaper game when I finished school. It's very competitive, they warned me. Hundreds apply for a handful of positions each year. In late 1979, as my high school certificate exams loomed, my mother phoned John Fitzy Fitzgerald, the florid-faced former editor of the Herald, a still powerful figure who'd given the eulogy at Dad's funeral. He advised me to send handwritten letters of application to the Herald and Weekly Times and The Age. Soon after, I was summoned to the Herald and Weekly Times building for an interview with a cigarette-puffing old bloke called Sess Wallace. Sess, who'd been a friend of my dad's and was a former editor of the Herald, was all stomach and jowl, cartoon-like. His words came out in friendly, crackly rasps. He He drew in smoke and asked what I thought of cigarette advertising. The question was put casually, but I sensed it was the pointy end of the rather strange interview. I had no real idea what I thought, but since he was smoking, I guessed he was for it. I mumbled something about freedom of speech extending to advertising, and this seemed to please him. I later realised newspapers would have once made great revenue from cigarette advertising. When I finished school, we went on a family trip to visit my mother's relatives in Sweden. We arrived back in Australia on a late January Friday to a letter from the Herald offering me a journalism cadetship. I was to start on Monday. But I wasn't ready to start my working life so soon, and rang my godfather, John Marr, the director of news at HSV7, which was still then part of the Herald and Weekly Times stable. He'd helped pull the strings to get me in. "I'm too jet-lagged to start on Monday," I said. "You get your ass in there on Monday. You're bloody lucky to have a job," he shouted down the phone. I obeyed.